Welcome to the Beyond Intuitive Eating Podcast, hosted by me, Beth Basham. I am a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, and liberated body coach. I'm also a wife and mama to two amazing little people. With over 20 years of experience, I help women bridge food freedom with optimal health using principles of intuitive eating, foundations of emotional mastery, functional medicine, and neuroscience. This is the space where you get to end the war with your body and discover total confidence and true health from the inside out. All right. Welcome to the podcast today. I am thrilled for today's conversation. I have actually brought in an expert today. Her name is Heidi Schuster, and Heidi is a nutrition and body image therapist, somatic experiencing practitioner, clinical supervisor, and an embodiment warrior who speaks and writes about whole self wellness. These are things I all personally really connect with. So I know we're going to have a great conversation. And she's from Boston. She's lived in Boston for nearly 30 years and is the author of not only one, but two books. Her award-winning book, Nourish: How to Heal Your Relationship with Food, Body, and Self. And her new book, Nurture: How to Raise Kids Who Love Food, Their Bodies, and Themselves, are two of Heidi's publications. And I can't wait to talk to her today. She's here actually with me in the room about intuitive eating and how to really support children as they grow up and cultivate their love for food, their bodies, and for themselves. This is a huge conversation topic I have in my communities because there are so many of us really trying to climb out of the trenches of diet culture ourselves, right? We're trying to do the hard work, and it's nearly impossible, at least even in my own personal experience, not to feel like we're leaving some residue on our children that comes from our own diet culture saturation, not to mention our kids are growing up in a world that is already saturated, and there's not a lot we can do about the outside influences outside of educate our kids. And maybe Heidi's going to give us some tips on how to navigate all that too, because we are in a climate, in a world where children are going to be exposed to diet culture, and we really want to help them grow up to not fall victim to that the same way that maybe we did. And so this conversation is great for a parent who really wants to build that resiliency in their children and help them navigate diet culture in a way that supports them coming through adolescence, through childhood, and into adulthood, really confident around these topics. So, Heidi, thank you so much for being here. I'm thrilled to have you.
I'm thrilled to be here, Beth. I'm already enjoying this conversation.
Yay.
Just listening to you.
Yeah, well, I know we have so much in common here, but I can't wait to get your perspective on this topic. And I, you know, as I said here, as I got the topic introduced, there are just so many questions about how to do this with our kids, how to raise our children so they do have a positive relationship with food and their bodies. This is obviously a very, very a topic, I should say, that's very, very close to your heart. Can you tell us a little bit about you, a little bit about your background, and why this topic is so close to your heart? I mean, you wrote a book about it. So yeah, share a little bit so we know who we're talking to.
Sure. Yes. I have two daughters. They are twins, now 18 and in college. And so obviously I was really intent to give them the best chance in this culture of ours, first and foremost. And I wanted them to have an easeful relationship with food and their bodies. But I've also been working in this field of disordered eating for almost 30 years. And so I've just heard so many stories at this point from so many people. And I think at this point, I do have some things to say to parents, some ideas about what to say, what not to say, how to navigate food in the house. And while I have some things to say about that, I also definitely have some compassion because I'm a parent myself. I have, you know, kind of gone through all those stages with kids, and I appreciate that it's really hard to navigate diet culture with kids and just navigate food with kids as a parent. I did some of, like, even as a someone who focuses on intuitive eating and health at every size and such a champion against diet culture, like, I made some mistakes in like saying things or doing things like chasing my kids out the door with their breakfast that I know are not the things that I would recommend. But I, you know, as a parent, we're like, we still do these things because we care and food is so like central to our role. So it's just, you know, I think I went into the topic with a lot of compassion as well as some ideas about some sort of practical tips around this because, you know, I've had to live it myself. And I really tried to write my latest book in that tone that, like, yes, I'm a parent too. I've had to bumble through this just as well as anyone else while I'm telling stories about some of the clients that I've worked with and you know, sort of my own stories. Also, I had my own eating disorder history too. I had an eating disorder as a teen, sort of like late teen. And so my own recovery informs my work as well.
Oh, I so much to reply to here and just hold space for. And I first want to say, I'm so glad you brought in this idea and concept that you're a human as well. And you've navigated the raising of the children and you haven't been perfect at it. I think that there's this idea that if you know the things, right? You and I are both dietitians. We've both been trained in child feeding and this, that, and the other. But and I will relate to this, I am also a mother of a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I'm navigating the beginning stages of this. And I have to say, there are moments where I'm like, oh my goodness, this is so much easier said than done. So I love that you bring this human element into the conversation. Hey, I've been there and I'm not perfect, but that's okay, right? It's about progress, not perfection. And every parent is just doing the best that they can do. So thank you for bringing that into the conversation. And as well, you know, you have this lens that you speak through your own experience with an eating disorder as a teen and navigating your own recovery. I think that's an important thing to understand, is that the healing journey is complex and there's lots of layers to it. And I know that you as a professional have so much to offer in this conversation because of that as well. So thank you for sharing all of that. You know, I'm curious, Heidi, when do you think our relationship with food starts to develop? Like, how do you explain this to parents who are navigating the throes of diet culture exposure to their kids?
I think our relationship with food develops like the minute we first cry out as a newborn baby and sure, get responded to either one way or another. Obviously there's so many stages in that development of child feeding and that relationship. But the key is that a child feels like they're going to be taken care of with food from very early on. And we all know, like, you know, I had one baby who was not a very good feeder, who like struggled through learning how to nurse at a young age because she was smaller. So, you know, I think that like that feeding relationship is so critical. And the most important thing is that you're engaged and you're present for it and you're working on it with your child. So I think it starts like from day one, actually.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's like the minute that baby, or I always tell my clients, we're intuitive eaters when we're born. Like, we know how to gauge our hunger and our fullness. We don't have all these external things being told to us. So when do you think like is a critical stage of development? So I hear this a lot from parents. I hear two things. Sorry, this is going to be a complex thing to break down, but how do we foster that from the beginning, right? For those listeners who have young kids. But then also, how do you deconstruct this for those teens or adolescents who maybe didn't have a parent who knew about intuitive eating or was engaged in the eating process, maybe threw down some of those rules that could disrupt the natural flow and hunger and fullness cue. So this is kind of a two-part question. So I'm sorry if this will circle back, but let's start with like how, you know, those critical early years. What's your best tips for those ages? You know, maybe like birth through age five, like how do we cultivate that from the very beginning? And then we can talk about the adolescence afterwards.
Sure. Yeah. Such a great question. And there's like so many things I could say about it, but I think that the most important thing, if I was to boil it down for like the young kids, is just keeping it light, believe it or not, like keeping it really light with kids around food, keeping it pleasurable and attuned and fun would be my umbrella recommendation. And that age, like toddlers, they get picky, they get jaggy with food. They get into little power struggles sometimes around food. And the key is, and this is again, one of those like easier said than done moments, is to like stay as chill as possible through all of that. Knowing that if they're only eating white foods this week, that might change pretty soon. And you want to keep introducing all the different colors, but know that this is just a moment in their development where they're a little bit more cautious, for example, than maybe next week or next month. So that kids like naturally go through phases with food where they're maybe more cautious or more adventurous. They go through times when they have a bigger appetite than other times, perhaps around growth spurts. And the key is to sort of like ride out all those little changes in eating with your child in a light and curious way. I think that's really the best that we can do as a parent, if that makes sense.
It does. And it sounds like you're almost requesting that we trust our children. We trust our children through this process, which I know from firsthand experience is not always easy, especially with a diet as a dietitian with my background in nutrition and child's health. Like you're like, oh my gosh, you're not eating enough green food this week. And it can feel like a challenge and a struggle to just let the child navigate the food environment on their own. So what I'm hearing you say is let's cultivate more curiosity and build that trust with our child because they are intuitive eaters when they're born. And we just want to kind of hold on to that as long as possible, especially through those toddler years.
Yeah. And the research actually supports that too. If you leave kids to their own devices before the culture gets in and starts telling them what's maybe good and bad and ugly in terms of food, they like pretty much eat a well-balanced diet over the course of a week or month. And they kind of do that naturally, taking in what their body needs from whatever's around them if they have sort of a diversity of food around them. So kids tend to actually naturally be pretty good at doing this. It's when the sort of adults come in and assert some judgment around the different food types that they start to almost question their own feelings about food. And like maybe copy some of what they're hearing from their environment. And they may also get that from peers too, not just parents, of course, and other adults in their sphere.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I noticed with my daughter, there's always this question. I'm curious what your feedback would be on this. This question of, you know, within the intuitive eating framework, and I know that there's multiple ways to look at child feeding that don't just revolve around intuitive eating, right? Like I've been trained on Ellen Satter's division of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea that when we give ourselves full permission to eat, it means like the pantry and the kitchen are open at all times. And we think, okay, our kids can just go to the pantry or the kitchen whenever and grab a snack and feed themselves when they need to be fed, especially as they move into like school age. So I have a 6-year-old and she does. She likes to go to the pantry and grab food whenever she wants. So can you help us navigate the structure versus flow and freedom that we might start to give our kids as they grow older and have a bit more autonomy with their food choices?
Yeah, I think that openness is really key. I'm a really big fan of keeping food really neutral. That said, I work with lots of families where they have already had challenges with food not being so neutral in their house. And that's the time when some kinds of limits might need to be set. We might talk about that around, say, like sugary foods, which everybody's always so concerned about. But as a general rule, like if you have an open pantry, open kind of system in your home, then kids know that they can take care of themselves and that they can eat according to their appetite, and they learn to trust their appetite. So I do recommend that. There are different situations that come up for people where there has to be a little bit more structure in place, but you have to know your kids and know your family. The key with any kind of structure or limits around anything is that everybody follows them in the family, and there's no like difference, particularly between siblings, so that like one sibling's allowed to have more of this than the other, that ends up becoming very problematic. I have adults that will report back that kind of thing happening in their childhood and how that really made them feel like there was something wrong with their body or their ability to eat food when they had some limits put on them that not the rest of the family had.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's really key. And there's going to be probably some differences in every single family. And I think this is where partnering, you know, with a professional can be supportive sometimes, right? To understand the personal dynamic and help you navigate where does structure need to be, where can you have more flexibility, you know, and how can you build that trust with your children and their, you know, them building trust with their own body. Do you believe in the whole like structured mealtimes thing, like that we should offer snacks? You know, Ellen Satter's division of responsibility is very much like we kind of eat on a schedule as a family. Do you think that that's wise, or do you think it's okay to have kind of open access to the pantry if you think your kid is trusting of their bodies?
Well, I like Ellen Satter. I actually heard her speak at my college in the early 90s. And she was like life-changing for my studies in nutrition at the time when she talked about this exact, you know, piece. And I do talk about it a little bit in my book, this division of responsibility where the parents provide the food and the kids eat it. And we try not to go over into their lane, which again is easier said than done. And I've done it myself as I've chased my kids out the door with their breakfast, which I own because I've done it, even though I know I don't want to be doing that. But the key is in terms of like, yes, like structured meals is wonderful. And if you do it for as long as you can, and when I say structured meals, meaning that like people sit down and we eat together, sometimes that's like the only time you get to see your teenager. If you have a habit in your house where we do sit down to dinner, and you know, my kids ended up getting very busy with sports and other activities, so it maybe wasn't every night, but there's something really valuable about spending time around food with family that, you know, I think is just priceless. So if you can do that as much as possible, yes. And I do think like helping kids to sort of support their very active growing bodies by having regular meals and potentially snack times too can be super helpful, especially if you have very busy kids, especially if you have kids who are easily distracted and maybe forget to eat. If you have kids that are high activity, they may not like put as much importance on food, but they may need it so much because they're burning so much energy during the day. So I think that like structured eating is super helpful. That said, having a more unstructured way about having snacks available so that kids can respond to appetite when it shows up in between those structured meals, I think is kind of the ideal way.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. You hear different like slight nuances and slight differences between different practitioners and professionals. So what I'm hearing you say is it's got to be tailored to the family and the uniqueness Absolutely. Of the child, right? Like it all, you know, we have these conversations and we have these blogs that you can read about how to feed your child and get your child to eat healthy and blah, 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 right? And there's never that opportunity to really tap into what's unique about your family unit, your child's personality, your child's energy level needs, and how snacks become that bridge between meals, you know, is going to look different for every child. So that's what I'm kind of hearing you say. There's a lot of flexibility that's required. And doesn't it start with the parent as well, Heidi? You know, the parent has to, at the same time they're helping their kid with the food, they're also helping themselves, because I think that there's, for me at least, parenting has been a huge self-development journey. Stuff I didn't really even realize I was going to be going through as a parent. It has stretched me in ways I never thought possible, not just around food. You know, this is around all kinds of other topics. But a lot of it is my own regulation of my own emotions. And I think that that's so important. What would you, can you speak to that on any level?
Oh, I'm so with you. I always say that my daughters are like my spiritual teachers, my greatest spiritual teachers. And self-regulation is something that we want to teach our kids. And we do that by example. We do that by keeping ourselves as regulated as possible, if that makes sense, which is not no easy feat when you're like trying to get out the door and you want, you know, you better make sure that your kid has something to eat, because there might be a meltdown wherever you're going if they don't have something to eat or whatever. So I think it can be hard to stay regulated as a parent. But the key is to really work on your own nervous system, and so that you can actually help support your kids' nervous systems that are just developing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, a bigger, like if we pull back the lens a little bit, there's a bigger theme underneath here is like when we tend to our own emotional regulation and how our emotions influence our reactions or our responses to our kids, there's a lot there for us to do as parents in order to help A, foster our children's own nervous system development, which by the way, takes a while to develop. Yeah. And B, it also helps us be more chill, be more cool in those moments where our kid isn't eating the food we think they quote unquote should be eating, right? We can start to notice what's going on inside of us when our child is only eating white foods this week, and let that be almost a teacher as we're navigating our own relationship with food and our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit, because I think the regulation piece becomes and evolves as our children grow older.
Yes.
I don't have teens yet. I don't have teens yet, but I have little ones. You have teens. So, you know, you've been through the whole gamut. Let's talk about those teen years, or maybe even adolescence into teen years. You know, how are we navigating, especially if they weren't raised as toddlers or children who we're really fostering that intuitive nature around food? How do we navigate it as they get older? Can you give some, I know that this is complex. This is probably way too much to cover in a podcast, but what would be some like general rules of thumb? What might you cover in your book that could really help these parents as the kids grow older?
Sure. Well, I think that once kids get to the teenage years, your influence is decreasing. And their peer influence is increasing quite a bit. So all the most, I think that so much of this work is done in childhood when you have a little more influence perhaps. But once they get older, like they're going to want to experiment and maybe eat differently, maybe try different things that they didn't eat when they were kids, maybe get more particular. They're going to, you know, their eating patterns may change because they're starting to navigate social media and they're seeing trends on social media. Unfortunately, a lot of them are sort of diet trends. So I think like the key for the older kids is just keeping like communication open about everything so that they may not be afraid to talk a little bit about something that they viewed on social media that just seemed really different than how we do things at home, for example. Keeping those lines of communication open is so critical. And in terms of supporting their relationship with themselves, not only their relationship with food, but also their relationship with themselves, really continuing to provide media literacy as much as possible, reminding them that like, well, of course, those meals that people show on Instagram look perfect and beautiful. Like, it's curated for that one photo. We don't see how that person eats the whole rest of the day. So, you know, providing some media literacy can be helpful. And once they get to be older teens, they don't really want to listen to you very much at all. So the key is, again, to just continue to provide regular contact points around good meals together. I really find that like when my kids come home from college, like that's one of the things they enjoy doing is sitting down, having a meal together and like chit-chatting about everything. But that was laid down in their teen years, where like the table was not just a place where we ate after everyone got back from sports practice and we were, you know, and we finally could get sit down and eat a meal. It was also like a place where we unpacked the day a little bit and talked about what was going on. And so like food and connection can be positive. And so the more you can make food a pleasurable experience for your older kids, the better, because, you know, they're going to hear all kinds of things that are more morality based around food in their social media feeds. So continuing to make food pleasurable, fun, continuing to cook together if your kids happen to like to do that is wonderful if they're open to doing that with you.
Those are great tips. I love that. I'm curious what you would say to a parent who's been well-intentioned, which I know very, if any, parents who aren't well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. Let's say they notice, you know, their preteen or their teen starting to pick apart their body, starting to skip certain foods that they used to enjoy or only go towards maybe lower calorie options. They just start to notice some of those behaviors that could indicate some disordered relationship to food in their body. How does a parent navigate that, Heidi? What's the first step? Because you said the communication might be decreased, there's less reliance on the parent. How do we navigate that?
Yeah, the communication is decreased, but I would keep it open. If I noticed behaviors like that, I'd want to point that out, that I was concerned. You know, I had an active teen who was like really getting very regimented about her workouts. And while I thought some of this could be normal because she's trying to train for her sport, I also was like, you know, I have my little red flags waving as a, you know, eating disorder practitioner. And so I talked to her about it and I was like, well, do you ever feel like if you can't do a workout today that like, you know, you're anxious about it, or, you know, like I just kept the communication open. So that I was sharing with her that I like really appreciated her dedication to her sport and taking good care of her body and being strong. But I also wanted her to have balance and that rest is really important too. And sometimes our bodies let us know that we need rest and, we have to be able to listen to that too. So I was always working on sort of having conversations around balance with her when she would let me have that conversation with her. But because I kept the communication lines open, she was open to that. And it was more about me asking questions and being curious about her experience than me saying, well, you should do it this way. Because that's not going to fly with a teenager. Like they don't want you to tell them what to do. They want you to be curious and interested in their experience and their point of view about things. And then it's so critical at all stages that you just express love for your kid. That is so important. So when they feel that care and love and concern coming from you, they're more likely to reach out to you if they really are struggling with something, anything related to mental health. They're more likely to say like, I'm really struggling with being sad, or I'm really struggling with something that's happening at school, or I'm really struggling with my body. They're much more likely to be open and talk about it if the lines of communication have been open and if there's been a loving connection on a regular basis.
I think that's really, really huge. And I heard something really important, a couple things. But the first thing I heard was, you know, we can't necessarily, especially as our kids grow older, tell them what to do. And I think that it's old habits may die hard in this scenario for a parent who has made a habit of telling their child how to do the thing, especially in, you know, younger years when they do need more direction, they do need more guidance in that way. It's breaking that habit and really breaking open the curiosity. So again, that word has come up a few times in this conversation, curiosity, curiosity, curiosity. And putting on that hat of curiosity can go a distance in your relationship with yourself and with your relationship with kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we can be curious about our own responses to something that's going on with your child. Like, oh, wow, I'm really noticing that, like, I'm getting anxious about this. And maybe there isn't something to get anxious about, but I'm having that reaction, that I'm noticing that activation in my nervous system. And getting that sort of settled before I reach out to my child and address the behavior that's going on.
Yeah.
Definitely can help. Easier said than done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this conversation is always, we have this conversation and there's heads nodding, I'm sure, like, oh, yeah, this is good. This is good. And then you go into your everyday normal life and you have a situation and it activates you. It turns on certain parts of you that just want to react versus respond to your child. And I want to come back to what you said initially in this conversation, which was, we are all human. We're only doing the best we can do. And the more we shame ourselves for what we haven't done well, it's going to keep us separated from that reconciliation or that mending or that repair that we can create with our child moving forward.
Absolutely. And I think that our kids, like, they ultimately see us striving, and that is a good thing. They don't want us to be perfect. I wouldn't want to live up to a perfect parent, quite honestly. So, like, we don't have to be perfect, but we want our kids to see us striving, growing, trying to be. Oops, that's my daughter actually calling from college. I'm going to have to send her a note that I'll respond to her later. So, just ironically, but no, I think we ultimately want to, I lost my train of thought. Where were we, Beth? Bring me back.
Yeah, no, it's all good. We were talking about the importance of repair, you know, like, we're not perfect.
Driving,
and we
yes.
need our kids to see that we're not perfect, because who wants to live up to a perfect ideal anyway? So you're kind of expanding on that and how just staying open and receptive is such an important part of that process of creating that connection
right.
with your child.
And kids don't want us to be perfect. But they do want to see us striving to be our best selves. And if we also are taking really good care of ourselves, or at least trying, doing our best, which is hard to do sometimes as a parent, but if we're doing our best, then they're watching that too. And I really believe that that's powerful. Again, we don't have to get it right. In fact, it's really wonderful if we don't get it right at times. And then we go back and say, you know, I said something there that just didn't sit right with me. And I just want to apologize for that. Or I noticed I said something about my body there that, like, just wasn't, like, very nice. And so I'm going to try to, like, say nicer things about my body from now on. Again,
Ooh,
it really helps for them to sort of see that you're in a process of taking good care of yourself and learning to, like, love and care for yourself well. And then hopefully they'll take that into their adult lives too.
Oh, I love that you brought up, like, a very tangible example, because I think that is, you know, if you are listening and you're still trying to climb out of the body image issues that you have on your own body, it is easy to just blurt out something, say something about a diet or a ugly body part, you know, in your perspective. And I once heard, I don't remember where it came from, this terminology, but this concept of rupture versus repair. Like, the ruptures are going to happen because we're imperfect people and we're not meant to be perfect. But what you just offered us is a perspective of repair. Like, the repair is more important than the rupture itself. So we might have a moment where we say a thing about our bodies or maybe a comment about food, and that's less of the problem than it is to go back, circle back because our kids are watching and say, look, this is something I said about myself. And, you know, I wish I hadn't said that. And this is why. And I want you to know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can fill in the blanks with your own language there. But I think that's so huge to just really be compassionate for ourselves in this process, or practice that at least. And then Absolutely. Go back and explain that to especially our older children who can really tangibly wrap their heads around what that means.
Right. Right. For little ones, like the short and sweet like response is typically fine, but older kids can maybe understand an explanation. And then the really cool thing, Beth, is that you hear your kids saying some of the things that you said to them. An example that I had put in my book was like, was one time I heard Kyla telling her friend who was like saying like, do I look fat? You know, and her response without hesitation was, no, you don't look fat in that. But even if you did, that's just another body type. And they just moved on with the conversation. This was like a middle school conversation. They just like moved on. And like, there wasn't this, like, it was sort of like, I'm not going to bond with you about bashing your body kind of response. And they moved on. Whereas like, you know, in the 70s and 80s, when I grew up, that would have been a very different conversation. I wouldn't have had the language for that. I think some of it is that we are evolving and learning a little bit about how to be kind to each other as women and not just bond around bashing our bodies. But but it's like the things that you say to your kids, you'll hear them say it then to their middle school and teenage friends. And you're like, okay, this did sink in. It really did.
Oh, that's a wonderful example. Oh, I love that. We're breaking those generational scars of, yeah, like you said, bonding through dieting or body bashing. Isn't that so pervasive, right? Isn't that such a way that people cling to diet culture, is through those relationships with their other women or other people in their lives. So thank you for bringing that example in. I want to ask you one more question, Heidi, and it's not necessarily backtracking, but it's such a common question I get. I just really want to get your take on it because I think it's something we all need to hear more of. But there's this concern, and you mentioned it a little earlier, about sugar with a lot of parents. You know, like, we want to keep all foods neutral and create this environment where they can have access to all the things, and variety is important. Talk about sugar, because it is more prevalent in our culture now than it was 100 years ago. There is different ways foods are made and processed, and there's a lot of concern about the ingredients in foods and how do we navigate that with our kids. Do you have any, and this could probably be a podcast on its own, but do you have any comments on that? Yeah. I mean, there's just so much complexity there. Or maybe there's more simplicity than complexity, but can you break down how you help parents navigate the sugar talk? And because kids are naturally, I will tell you, my 6-year-old, she'll choose sugar a lot because it, you know, I know the things I know, but she does preference, you know, foods that are contain more sugar in them. And we don't make that a problem in our house, but I can see how challenging that can be to not make that a problem. Does that make sense?
Sure. And so absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're naturally
drawn to sweet foods for sure. Our bodies are naturally drawn to things that are sweet. When kids are growing and in need of, you know, quick energy, it makes sense that they would gravitate towards foods that provide that as well. That said, I am a real big fan of trying to keep it as neutral as possible. If you are able to do that, if you have little ones, and you can make it really neutral, and then I think that's great. In fact, I did a practice, which doesn't work for lots of families, and it can be very controversial when I bring this up, but I did a practice where dessert was just on the table with the rest of the food. And it wasn't seen as special or the thing that we had after if we ate enough of the other foods. I kept it very neutral. In general, when like Halloween came around, my kids would get their Halloween candy and they would eat it for a couple of days, like here and there, but then it would get dusty. But their friends who are from sugar-free houses would come over and look for it for months after. So I do think there really is something to be said for creating a gray area when it comes to sweets and not having this black and white kind of like space where there are no sweets in our house or there's no sugar in our house. I really do think it just sets kids up to go to their friend's house and hunt for sugar. So I'd like try to discourage people against doing that. If there's already a charge around sweets in the family, in the child, and you can see it, then I'm absolutely happy to work with families on creating some reasonable limits around it. And the actual limit around it doesn't matter. What matters is that everybody feels comfortable with it and everyone follows it and there's no favoritism and it's reasonable. So for example, you wouldn't send a kid into a candy store and say, you can eat whatever you want. That's just a recipe for a stomach ache, right? But you could send the kid into a candy store and say, you can have $5 or you can fill this little bag. And then that's setting a reasonable limit with them around foods that they may already have a little bit of a charge around. And that tends to work well. But in general, the least amount of restrictions that you can create in your house, I think the better around most foods.
Do you believe that children will what I'm hearing you say, and just to clarify, you believe that children will, when those restrictions are released to the extent that's possible for the parent, the child will self-regulate their intake and they'll naturally eat other foods, you know, that may be considered more nutrient dense or quote unquote healthy. Is that your experience when working with families and your own family too?
My experience is that yes, kids are generally pretty good self-regulators. That said, like some kids do really struggle. Like there may be kids for whom their neurodivergence and their schedule and their, you know, the way that they're fed at school, for example, just really sets them up to be craving, you know, quick energy at different times. And they really do struggle with sugary foods and need to be directed towards like more balance in their snack choices. And that's okay. I think that's like reasonable to work with. But the key is to not make anything off limits in the end. Redirecting kids towards balance and diversity, I think, is always healthy. But I think we have to be careful about making certain things off limits.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. And there's a lot of individual variability in that as well. So it's, you know, we don't want people to leave this conversation and say, oh, this is what they said that they should do, right? There's always going to be some flexibility and opportunity for customizing your plan for your family, for your child, because of these different factors, neurodivergence, the activities, the schedules, like just the different growth schedules of kids too. You know, like I used to work in pediatrics. And so I saw, it's sad to say, Heidi, but I was trained as an adolescent weight management specialist over like almost 20 years ago. And there was this huge concern about child obesity. Well, there still is, but there was this like really strong stigma around it. And I just think about some of the things that I was instructed to do or how to help these families. And I wish I could go backwards and change everything I did, you know? And that's not possible, and that's okay. We learn as we go, and we get better as we learn. And what we're having in this conversation right now is just to say, that's the case. We're all learning, and finding someone, a professional who's trained in intuitive eating, could be really helpful at this stage in the game too, to help you navigate your own situation with grace and with compassion.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no one size fits all when it comes to feeding a family. The key is really staying, staying curious and open and being willing to experiment. And that's what I do with the families that might come in and want some consultation. We just experiment with different things and sort of see what works. Like, I don't have the answer for every single family, but I'm willing to get curious and look at what's going on and do some experimentation.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Thank you, Heidi. This conversation has been so amazing. You're obviously an expert at what you do. And I would love for you to share a little bit more about this new book that you released. You've mentioned it a couple times in our conversation, but who is this book for? Who needs to go grab it from? Tell us where to buy it. I think it's on Amazon. I think I saw it on there. Tell us where to buy it. Tell us where we can find it and tell us who it's for, because I think this is a great resource that we can open up to people who need it.
Well, thank you. The book is Nurture, How to Raise Kids Who Love Food, Their Bodies, and Themselves. And it is available. It is available on Amazon. It's available at bookshop.org, which is also kind of cool. It's a platform that supports local bookstores. It's also available on my website. So if you're someone who is wanting to support the author directly, which we always appreciate, then you can buy it on my website, which is anourishingword.com. And the book is written for parents and caregivers. And a lot of the reviews that are coming back are sort of saying that it's not just for people who spend time with kids. Although obviously that's my target audience. I think that anyone who's been a kid who's grown up in an environment around diet culture can appreciate some of what I'm saying in there. But it's the direct audience is for parents and caregivers to just navigate helping your kids develop a more easeful relationship with food and body as they grow up. We talk about a lot of the topics that you brought up here today in the podcast, obviously in more depth. I use a lot of personal examples from my clients, from my own parenting. And I really, like I mentioned earlier, I try to really write with a compassionate tone that this is not just, you know, yeah, sure, I have some experience in this field, but I also appreciate the challenges of being a parent and trying to navigate social media and food and all of it with your kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. Would it be for any parent of any age child, do you think, or is there a target that you wrote to, teens or toddlers, or does it matter? Is it just for all parents who?
Yeah, it's for all parents. Yeah. I think like it's wonderful if somebody is starting out their parenting journey. They would like certainly appreciate that information. But I think if you have an older child or a teen, especially if you're concerned about them potentially, there are things that you would gain from this as well. So I write for parents of all ages.
I love that. Great. I already referred somebody in the Facebook community I run to your book. They were asking specifically for a resource for their teenager. So I said, I popped your note in, I put in your book link and hopefully they saw it. But I think this is a great resource for my community as well. So I'm so, so grateful that you have taken the time to author a book. What a huge undertaking. I mean, this is your life's work and you've put it into, you know, pages on a book. And I think that's just amazing. So thank you for that, you know, putting all of your experience into a place where families can access it.
You're so welcome, but I have to say that it like sort of wrote itself. Like I feel like I'm just like I was the channel in some ways, but it just wanted to be written.
I love that.
And I think it was as my own kids were going off to college and my world was shifting a little bit, it just felt like the right time. So,
yeah. Well, go check out Heidi's book. I will put everything in the show notes, all the links that she mentioned, the website. If you want to go support her directly, I think that's wonderful. Buying her book through her website. And we'll, of course, connect you to Heidi in all the ways that she can be connected with. So check out the show notes if you want to follow up on this conversation. But thank you, Heidi, so much for being here. It has been a sincere pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you so much, Beth. I really appreciate it. This was lovely. I really, I think we're on the same page for sure.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you guys next time. See you next week. Hey there, beautiful soul. Do you ever find yourself caught in an endless loop of negative thoughts about your body and feel like you're in a constant war with what and how much to eat? If so, you're not alone. Reading a book, listening to a podcast, or talking to a friend may not be enough to help you experience total confidence with food and your body. For this reason, I have reopened my group coaching program, Peace with Food and Soul, a 4-month immersive space where you get to finally shed food and body guilt for good. I have dozens of testimonials from happy clients who will never spend another cent on diet culture solutions because they have created health, mind, body, and soul from the inside out in this program. Check out the show notes for a link to more information if joining a small community who gets you is just what you need to accelerate your journey. Thank you so much for listening in today. I am so grateful. If you enjoyed this podcast, I ask that you share it with a friend who might also benefit. And if you want even more support on your food and body journey, please check the show notes for information about my free Facebook group and private coaching opportunities. See you next time.